5. Spring term A. White noise. Throughout the rest of January, I tried not to think too much about anything. I did my schoolwork without thinking about it. I didn't talk to anyone about Cambridge, but everyone knew that I hadn't got in. I texted Alid several times to check how he was, but he didn't reply. I had a lot of coursework due at the end of the month. I had to stay up very late to finish it every night. I actually didn't go to sleep at all the night before it was due. I just stayed up the whole night and went to school in the morning without any sleep. I had to call Mum and ask her to pick me up at break because I thought I was going to pass out. And alongside all of this, I continued listening to Universe City. The episodes in December and January were pretty bland. Alid didn't seem to know what he was doing. He forgot almost entirely about several ongoing subplots. The new characters were uninteresting and didn't appear in the story very often. And on the final Friday of January, Alid posted the episode that would destroy the Universe City fandom. The episode was titled Goodbye, and it was 20 minutes of white noise. You must have come from a star. The fandom pretty much collapsed in collective despair. The Tumblr tag was overflowing with lengthy obituaries, miserable text posts, and emotional fan art. It was all very sad, so I didn't look at it for too long. Alid tweeted his final tweet on the same day. Radio. At Universe City. I'm sorry. I need some time. You may be very small, but you are all very important in the universe. Goodbye. Heart emoji. 31st of January, 2014. And people flooded my inbox with questions, even though I was nothing to do with Universe City anymore. Anonymous asked, "You haven't been consistently active on Tumblr for a few months now. You're the only person, apart from the creator, who has ever had any involvement in the show. You recently turned your ask box back on, so I hope you won't mind me sending this message. Do you have any insight into Universe City's Goodbye episode that was posted 2 weeks ago? Assuming you've listened to it." Talusa answered, "I don't really know what to say, except I'm as sad as you are that the creator decided to do this, but they're obviously going through some personal things right now. Nobody except the creator knows whether Universe City will ever return, so I suggest everyone starts trying to move on. Things like this happen. It's just unfortunate that it's happened to something that's so important to so many people. I knew the creator. Universe City was very, very important to them. In fact, that's an understatement. Universe City really was the only thing they had. Universe City was the only thing I had for a long time too. I don't really know what to do with myself anymore. I don't know what the creator is going to do either. I don't know what to say." I didn't know why he'd decided to end it. Maybe his mum had made him. Maybe he hadn't had enough time to make it. Or maybe he just didn't want to make it anymore. It still confused me, because it was clearly important to him. He cared about it more than anything. He hadn't even revealed who February Friday was yet. On the night of the White Noise episode, I sat in the lounge with my laptop and thought, for the first time in at least a month, about who February Friday might be. It came to me almost instantly. What Alid had said about Karis the night he'd come back to the village had been rattling around my mind for weeks. And then suddenly, I realised why. Fire. The bonfire of clothes. She'd burned her hands in the fire. It was such a random story for him to tell us. Of everything he could have said about Karis's relationship with their mum, he chose that particular event. I loaded up Alid's university transcription block and ran a Control-F find for the word fire in each of the first 20 episodes. I then copied and pasted relevant quotes into a Word document. 1. And after the fire, that was it. You were gone. 2. I see you in every fire that lights. 3. In the end, I wish it had been me who'd fallen into the fire, though maybe that's a selfish thing to say. 4. The fire that touched you must have come from a star. 5. You were always brave enough to get burned in the fire. There wasn't any doubt in my mind after that. Karis last was February Friday. Failure. It had all been a cry for help. University. The entire thing. It had been a cry for help from a brother to a sister. It took me that weekend to work out what I needed to do. I needed to get Karis to help Alid. At this point, she was the only person who could help him. The letters to February had been there since the beginning. Alid had been writing about Karis for years. He missed her. He wanted to talk to her. And he had no idea where she was. If she was anywhere at all. It was Alid's mum who was keeping Karis's location from him. I didn't know how, and I didn't know why, but I couldn't stop thinking about it and worrying. I'd had my chance to help Karis, and I'd missed it by 10,000 miles. Well, that was exactly it, wasn't it? I'd had my chance to help before and failed, and I've never liked failure. Silver-haired girl. Yo, small blonde person. Swap seats with me. I looked up from my history worksheet on the Monday after to see a silver-haired girl jostling the boy in the seat next to me out of his seat and then sitting in it herself. She made herself comfortable, put her elbow on the table and her chin in her hand, and gazed at me. The silver-haired girl was Rain Singupta. She'd recently dyed her previously black hair bright silver, and her side undercut was so extreme that she'd basically just shaved the right side bare. Hair is a window to the soul. "Francis, my pal, you are not doing so great, are you?" she said with a solemn nod. I still hung out at school with Rain and Maya and all of that lot, and I still spoke to Rain fairly often. But they didn't know anything about what had gone down with Alid or Universe City. I laughed. "What do you mean?" "I mean you've been moping around like a damp biscuit, mate," she sighed. "Are you still in mourning for Cambridge?" I felt like I was about to explode with how much I was panicking about Alid, about Karis, about helping them, about doing something good for once in my absolute failure of a life. But instead I said, No, I'm fine, I promise." "Well, that's good." "Yes." She continued to stare at me. Then she looked down at what I was doing, which was doodling on a worksheet instead of filling in the answers. "Hey, these are good. These are like your drawings for university." I nodded. "Thanks." "You should screw uni and just go to art college or something," she said. "Miss Garcia would love you." She'd meant it as a joke, but for a very brief second, I took the idea completely seriously, and it startled me, and I tried not to think about it after that. "So, what's been going on?" she continued. I wanted to tell her, and I didn't. I wanted to tell someone, but I wasn't sure if Rain was the right person. Was there a right person to vent to about all the stuff that's been happening? I did it anyway. From my involvement with university, to what Alid did to Daniel, to what I did to Alid, to what his mum did to Alid, to Karis being February Friday, and the goodbye episode. All of it. All of it, except the one thing I still couldn't admit to anyone, except Alid. About me and Karis. I still couldn't quite find the words to tell that bit. "That's a lot of stuff," she said. "What's your plan?" "What do you mean?" "You're just gonna let everything end like this." She folded her arms. "Alid's all alone and trapped at university. Karis is out there in the world and has no idea what's going on with her brother. Universe City ended with absolutely no explanation. And nobody's going to do anything about any of this. Except maybe you." I stared down at my worksheet. "Well, I want to find Karis so she can help Alid, but it's probably impossible." "Aren't you Alid's friend?" "Yeah, of course." "So, don't you want to help?" "Well, of course I wanted to help. Why was I still hesitating about this?" "I don't know." Rain tucked the longer side of her hair behind her ears. "It's like, okay, this is going to sound really silly, but my mum, she always says this thing about when you've got a lot going on, you have to look at the bigger picture. Just take a step back and look at the big picture and think about what's really important at this moment in time." I sat up straight. My mum says literally the exact same thing. "What? No way." "Yeah, she calls it the big scheme of things." "Mate, that's literally what I'm talking about." We both grinned. Rain really was trying to help me. "You know what I think would help in the big scheme of things?" said Rain. She crossed one leg over the other and looked me in the eye. "Finding Karis last." Filofax. The reasons why I was scared about finding Karis last were as follows. 1. The last time I had seen and spoken to Karis last had been 18 months ago. 2. The last time I had seen and spoken to Karis last, I had kissed her without asking, and she had not been happy about it, and it had made her run away from home, and I had been embarrassed and guilty about it every day since. 3. The effort it would take to locate Karis last when the only person who knew her location was a terrifying dog murderer would probably make me even more stressed than I already was, if that was possible. Despite all of this, the idea of doing something helpful for once in my absolutely useless life was what kept me going. That was the thing, I guess. I'd been rejected from Cambridge, and I felt like my entire life had been a waste. Which is silly and pathetic, I know. Believe me, I understand. Rain came round my house after school the next day to discuss her Find Karis plan. Because Rain was still severely underachieving in all 3 of her A-levels, she was still being forced to sit outside Dr. Afalayan's office every lunchtime and free period to do her homework. This also meant that Rain saw a lot of people pass in and out of the office, which, by the way, was more of a large conference room, air-conditioned, plasma TV on the wall, several potted plants and comfy armchairs. One of these people was parent governor Carol Last. According to Rain, Carol carried a pink Filofax with her whenever she came into school for a meeting. Also, according to Rain, if Carol had any record of Caris's address, it would be inside the Filofax. I had no idea how we were supposed to steal Carol's Filofax from under her nose. And to be honest, I didn't really want to. It's not like I'd stolen anything before, or wanted to become a thief. The idea of getting caught by her was enough to make me feel a bit ill. "Well, don't worry about it," she said. We were sitting at my breakfast bar eating bourbon biscuits out of the packet. "I have way less morals. I've stolen stuff before." "You've stolen stuff?" "Well, sort of. I stole Thomas Lister's shoes because he threw a sandwich at me on the bus." She grinned and looked up. "He had to get off the bus and walk in his socks in the snow. Beautiful." The plan was that Rain would walk directly into Carol as she exited Affaline's office and drop a load of books everywhere. Theoretically, Carol would then drop her Filofax and Rain could grab it without her noticing. I thought this was a terrible plan because it relied on A, the Filofax being in Carol's hand and not in her bag, B, Rain dropping her books in such a way that she could pick up the Filofax without Carol seeing, and C, Carol immediately forgetting she had been holding the Filofax after dropping it. In other words, I couldn't see any way this was going to work. We didn't even know for sure whether Caris's address would be in there. Mum happened to be in the kitchen at the time, and as Rain finished speaking, she said this. "I'm not too sure this is going to work, girls." Rain and I turned to her. Mum smiled and tied up her long hair. "Let me deal with this." We knew for sure that Carol would be in school at 2 p.m. on Thursday the 13th of February for a meeting of all the parent governors. I wondered what jobs these parents did that allowed them to be free at 2 p.m. on a Thursday. I wondered why Carol was a parent governor of a school that neither of her children went to. Mum had taken a day off work. She said she never used up all of her holiday time anyway. I think Mum was very excited to be part of this plan, actually. She'd scheduled an appointment to see Dr. Affalion at 3 p.m. She said she was going to talk to Carol as she left the parent governor meeting. She didn't say how she was going to get Caris's address. Rain and I would be in a history lesson while this was happening, so we had no idea what was going to happen. "Leave it all to me," Mum had said with a wicked grin. Rain came back home with me on the train after school that day. Mum was waiting for us at the kitchen table. She was wearing the only trouser suit she owned, and her hair was pinned up with a hair claw. She looked like the most stereotypical mum I'd ever seen. She was holding up the pink Filofax. "Jesus Christ!" I shrieked, kicking my shoes off into a corner and hurling myself onto a bar stool. Rain quickly joined me, with an expression of absolute awe. "How the hell did you do it?" "I asked her if I could borrow it," she said, with a nonchalant shrug. I coughed out a laugh. "What?" Mum leaned on the table. "I asked her if she had the contact address of our local MP, because I wanted to write a strongly worded letter about the honestly weak amount of homework you lazy students are being set, and how the local schools are letting you down and making you all slackers." She held out the Filofax to us. "But, of course, I had to hurry into a meeting, so I didn't have time to stop and copy the address down. So I asked if I could borrow it and said I'd drop it through her letterbox after the meeting. So you two had better be quick." "She must seriously like you," I said, shaking my head and taking the Filofax. Mum shrugged and said, "She always tries to talk to me at the post office." It only took Rain and me 10 minutes to look through the entire address book section and to discover that there was no entry for Caris last. We then looked through the notes section, but only found a variety of shopping lists, to-do lists, work-related notes. I still had no idea what she actually did. And Mum's notes from her meeting, which consisted of the words blah, 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 a smiley face, and a small drawing of a dinosaur. I made sure to tear that page out. "I don't think it's here," I said, feeling my stomach drop a little. I had honestly believed we might find something. Surely Carol had a record of her daughter's address somewhere. If she even had an address. Rain groaned. "What are we going to do now? It's already February. Alid's been gone for nearly 2 months." "February," I said, suddenly. "What?" "February." "February?" I pulled the Filofax towards me. "Let me just have one more look." I turned each page of the address book very slowly. And then I stopped, cried, "Yes!" and stabbed a finger onto the page. "Oh my God," Rain whispered. In the F section of the address book, there were only 4 entries. The top one was for a person who apparently didn't even have a surname. There was only 1 word on the name dotted line. February. London's burning. I took the train to London that Friday. Mum made me promise to carry a rape whistle at all times and text her every hour. I was going to do this. I was going to find Caris. She was going to help Alid. I found myself at a fairly clean-looking townhouse in a residential area. It was a lot fancier than I'd expected. Obviously, it wasn't one of those posh white townhouses that everyone thinks of when they imagine London living. But Caris wasn't living in a hovel. I'd been expecting something with crumbling walls and boarded up windows. I walked up the steps to the door and rang the doorbell. It rang in the tune of London's Burning. A young black woman with vibrant pink hair opened the door. It took a moment for me to say anything, because she'd nestled daisies into her explosion of curls, and it really was the best hair I had ever seen. "You're right, mate?" she asked in a typically London voice. She sounded a bit like Rain, actually. Yeah, I was looking for Caris last." I cleared my throat because my voice was a bit wobbly. Apparently she lives here?" The woman made a sympathetic face. "Sorry, mate. No, there's no Caris here." "Oh." My heart sank. And then I had a thought. "Wait, what about someone called February?" I asked. The woman looked a little surprised. "Oh, yeah, that's Feb. You an old friend or... yeah, sort of." She grinned and leaned on the doorframe. "Man, I knew she'd changed her name, but Caris, bloody hell, that's so Welsh." I laughed too. "So, is she in?" "Nah, mate, she's at work. You could probs go find her there if you've got the time. Or you can chill here for a bit." "Oh, right. Is she far away?" "Nah, she's just down on South Bank. She works at the National Theatre. She's, like, a tour guide and she runs, like, workshops for kids and stuff. About 10 minutes on the tube." As I had been half expecting Caris to be struggling along with some sort of horrible minimum wage job, this was an extreme surprise to me. Would she mind? Would I be interrupting her or something? The woman checked her watch, which was chunky and yellow. "Nope. It's gone 6, so she'll have finished her workshops. You'll probs find her in the gift shop. She usually helps out there till she finishes at 8. Okay. I paused on the step. This was it. I was going to see Caris. Or, no. Wait, I had to check, just to be sure. So, Caris, I corrected myself, February, just to check, she's got blonde hair. Dyed blonde hair, blue eyes, big tits and a straight face like she could rip out your throat. The woman chuckled. Is that her? I smiled nervously. Yeah. It only took me another 20 minutes to get to the National Theatre. South Bank, a riverside area filled with cafes and stalls and restaurants and buskers, was heaving with people out for dinner and going to the theatre, and it was pretty dark already. Someone was playing a Radiohead song on an acoustic guitar. I'd only been here once before. I'd been with school to see a production of Warhorse. As I walked towards the theatre using Google Maps as a guide, I checked what I was wearing. A stripy pinafore dress over a t-shirt that had speech bubbles all over it. Thick grey tights and a Fair Isle cardigan. I felt like myself, and that really did make me feel a bit more confident about the situation. Right before I stepped into the National Theatre, I genuinely had a moment when I was about to turn round and go home. I texted my mum the crying face emoji, and she texted back a thumbs up, several salsa dancing girls, and a four-leaf clover. I entered the building, a huge, grey block that looked nothing like your typical London theatre, and immediately located the gift shop near the entrance. I walked in. It took me a minute to spot Caris, though it really shouldn't have, because she stood out just as well as she always had. She was sorting through some books on a shelf, rearranging and adding some in from a cardboard box she had under one arm. I walked over to her. Caris, I said. And hearing that name, she immediately frowned and whipped her head around to face me, like I'd frightened her somehow. It took her a moment, and then she recognised me. Francis Janvier, she said, with an absolutely expressionless face. Golden Child. Lots of things were freaking me out. Her hair, for one. The blonde was peroxide now, almost white, and her fringe only reached halfway down her forehead. Her eyes looked so much bigger. You could actually see her looking at you. Jesus Christ, her winged eyeliner must have taken, like, half an hour to do. She was wearing red lipstick, a nautical striped crop top, and a calf-length beige skirt with platform pastel pink Mary Janes. She had a National Theatre lanyard round her neck. She looked approximately 24 years old. The only thing that was the same was the leather jacket. I couldn't remember whether it was the same one she'd worn all the time back then, but it produced the same effect. She looked like she could probably murder me. Or sue me. Perhaps both. And then she started to laugh to herself. I knew it, she said. And there it was. That slightly posh, made-in-Chelsea voice. Soft like Alid's. Like she belonged on the TV. I knew someone would find me eventually. She looked down at me, and it really was her. But I didn't feel like I was talking to someone I had even met before. I just didn't think it'd be you. I chuckled, awkwardly. Surprise. Ah. She raised her eyebrows, and then turned away and shouted towards the woman at the till. Hey, Kate, can I leave early? The woman shouted back that she could, and then she went and got her bag, and we left together. Caris took me to the theatre bar, which didn't surprise me at all. She'd liked drinking when she was 16, and she still liked drinking now. She also insisted on buying me a drink. I tried to stop her, but before I knew it, she was ordering us two daiquiri cocktails, which probably cost £20 each, knowing London. I took my jacket off and put it on my stool and willed myself to stop sweating quite so profusely. "So, what called for this?" she asked, sipping on her cocktail through two tiny straws and looking me dead in the eye. "How'd you find me?" Thinking about the Filofax fiasco made me laugh out loud. "My mum stole your mum's address book." Karis frowned. "My mum shouldn't have my address." She looked away. "Oh, shit. I bet she read my letter to Alid." You sent Alid a letter?" "Yeah, last year when I moved in with my housemates. Just telling him everything was okay and what my new address was. I'd even signed it February, so he'd know I was using that name." "Alid..." I shook my head slightly. "Alid hasn't heard anything from you. He told me." Karis almost didn't seem to have heard me. "My mother? Christ! I don't know why I'm surprised." She let out a breath and then raised her eyebrows and looked at me. I wondered where I was supposed to start. There were so many things I needed to tell her. I needed to ask. She got there first with, "You look different. Your clothes are more you. And your hair is down." Thanks, I... "So, how are you?" Karis continued to bombard me with questions for several minutes, preventing me from bringing up anything I actually wanted to talk about, such as, 1, your twin brother has been displaying worrying behaviour for around 7 months. 2, I'm extremely sorry for being a crap friend. 3, how do you have your life so together? You're literally 18 years old. 4, please explain why your name is now February. She was still the most intimidating person I'd ever met. More intimidating now. Everything about her bloody terrified me. "Did you get into Cambridge in the end?" she asked. "No," I said. "Ah, so what's the plan?" I don't know. It doesn't matter. I didn't come here to talk about that." Karis gazed at me, but said nothing. "I came to find you because of Alid," I said. She glanced at me, eyebrows raised. The stony expression I knew was back. "Oh, right." I started from the beginning. I explained how Alid and I had become friends, how we'd found each other and our weird universe city coincidence. I explained about how I'd accidentally outed him as the creator, and how he'd stopped texting me, and how his mum was out to destroy everything he had. Karis listened, taking small sips as I spoke, but I could tell that she was getting more and more concerned. I was fiddling with my glass, passing it from one hand to the other. "This is," she said, once I'd finished. "God, I never thought she'd start with him too." I almost didn't want to ask. "Start what?" Karis thought about it for a moment, crossing one leg over the other and swishing her hair. "Our mother doesn't believe that there's any way to have a fulfilling life unless you're academically successful." She put down her glass and held up one hand, pointing to each finger as she spoke. She still had those tiny burn scars covering her skin. "This means that you need brilliant grades all of the time. Only academic GCSE and A-level subject choices. And an academic top-quality university degree." She put down the hand. She believes in this so strongly that she would actually rather we died than didn't do all of that. "Fuck," I said. "Yes," Karis laughed. "Unfortunately for me, as you well know, I was one of those people who, no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't get good grades at anything. But Mum thought she could just force me to become magically clever. Tutors, extra homework, summer camps, etc. Which was ridiculous, obviously." She took another sip. She was telling this story with the sort of nonchalance a person might have when talking about their summer holiday. "Alid was the clever one. He was the dream child. The favouritism was obvious, even before our dad left when we were 8. Mum absolutely despised me because I couldn't solve maths problems. I was the fat, dumb child. And she made my life a literal hell. I didn't want to ask, but I did anyway. What did she do? She just slowly took away everything that brought me any joy in my life." Karis shrugged. "It was like, you don't get an A on this test, fine. You can't see your friends this weekend. You don't get 10 out of 10 on this worksheet, okay. I'm taking your laptop away for 2 weeks. And it got gradually nastier, you know? It turned into, like, you don't get an A in your mock GCSE. I'm locking you in your room for the weekend. You fail your exam. You're not getting any birthday presents. God, she's literally a monster." Karis held up a finger. "But she's cunning as well. She doesn't do anything illegal or anything that sounds abusive. That's how she gets away with it." "And do you think she's doing this stuff to Alid now?" "From what you've told me, I mean, it sounds like it. I never thought she'd actually turn on him. He was the golden child. I never would have... I mean, if I'd known, if he'd seen my letter and replied and told me..." She shook her head, abandoning her sentence. "Ugh, I couldn't even defend myself against her, let alone him. I guess if I wasn't there, she just needed someone else to destroy. I didn't know what to say. And I can't believe she had the dog put down," she continued. "That's just horrific." Alid was devastated. "Yeah, he loved that dog to bits." There was a pause then, and I took a long sip of my drink, which was very strong. "Honestly, though, I hated him at the time." This was a shock. "You hated him? Why?" "Because I got all the torment from our mum. Because he was the golden child and I was the stupid one. Because he never stood up for me. Ever. Even when he could see how badly she was treating me. I blamed him entirely." She saw my look of disdain and raised her eyebrows. "Oh, don't worry. I don't think like that anymore. I don't blame him at all anymore. It's all that woman's fault. If he'd have tried to stand up for me, she just would have made both our lives unbearable." The whole thing was desperately sad, and I knew that I had to get them talking again, even if it was literally the last thing I ever did. "Anyway," One day I just had to get out. She finished her drink and put the glass down. If I stayed there, I would have been miserable for the rest of my life. She'd have made me do A-levels, probably repeat a year when I inevitably failed them, and then I'd struggle to get a job that matched up to my mum's expectations. She shrugged. So I just left, tracked down my grandparents, my dad's parents, and lived with them for a while. My dad's a goner, but my grandparents always stayed in touch. Then I got involved with the National Youth Theatre, managed to get funding for one of their acting courses I'd auditioned for, then applied for a job here. She flipped her hair like a film star, making me laugh. And now my life's great. Living with friends, a fun job, doing something I enjoy. Life isn't all textbooks and grades. I felt a glow at the knowledge that she was happy. I had expected to learn a lot of things about Caris Last when I found her, but that was not one of them. But, she leaned back in her seat, I am sorry that Aled's having a rough time. I've been really worried about him since he stopped making Universe City. Caris tilted her head, her white blonde hair shimmering a little under the LED lights of the bar. Making University. And then I realised. Caris had no idea what Universe City was about. You don't know the story of Universe City? I brought my hand up to my forehead. Oh my God. She stared at me, baffled. And then I told her everything that had happened in Universe City, including about February Friday. Her icy expression melted as I spoke. Her eyes widened. She shook her head several times. I assumed you knew, I said, once I'd finished. I mean, you're twins. She snorted. We don't have a psychic connection. No, I thought he would have told you. Aled doesn't say anything. She was frowning again. Deep in thought. He doesn't bloody say anything. I thought that might have been why you chose the name February. February is my middle name. There was a piercing silence. And it was all for me, was it? She asked. Well, it was mostly for him, really. But he wanted you to listen. He wanted to talk to you. Eventually, she sighed. I always thought you two were similar. I spun the straw around my glass. Why? You never say what you're actually thinking. Family. We stayed there for a while longer, talking about our lives. She was only 3 months older than me, but she was 10 times as adult. She'd done job interviews, she paid bills and taxes and drank red wine. I couldn't even make a doctor's appointment by myself. When it got to 9:30, I said I'd better leave, so she paid for our drinks, despite my protests, and we left to walk back to Waterloo Station. I still hadn't managed to ask her to help Aled somehow, and this was the only chance I was going to get. After we'd hugged to say goodbye in the middle of the station, I asked her, "Is there any chance you'd get in touch with Aled?" I said in a quiet voice. She seemed unsurprised. Her face resumed her classic expressionless mask. That's the main reason you came to find me, right? Well, yeah. You must really like him. He's the best friend I've ever had. I immediately felt a bit pathetic for saying it. "That's cute," she said. "But I don't think I can talk to him again." My stomach dropped. "What? Why?" "I've just..." She fidgeted awkwardly. "I've put that life behind me. I've moved on. It's not any of my business anymore." "But he's your brother. He's your family." "Family means nothing," she said, and I knew she believed it. "You have no obligation to love your family. It wasn't your choice to be born." "But Alid's good. He's... I think he needs help and he won't talk to me." "It's just not my business anymore," she said, raising her voice slightly. No one noticed. People were rushing about around us, their voices echoing around the station. "I can't go back, Francis. I made my decision to leave and not look back. Alid will be fine at university. It's where he's always been destined for. Honestly, trust me. I grew up with him. If anyone was supposed to be at university doing some sort of difficult academic degree, it'd be him. He's probably having the time of his life." And I realized then that I didn't believe her. He'd told me he didn't want to go. Back in the summer, he'd said he didn't want to go to university and nobody listened. And now there he was. When I'd called him in December, he'd sounded like he wanted to die. "He wrote the letters to February to you," I said. "For you. Even when you were still at home. He was making Universe City and hoping you'd find out and talk to him." She said nothing. "Do you care?" "Obviously, but..." "Please," I said. "Please, I'm scared." She shook her head slightly. "Scared of what?" "That he's going to disappear," I said. "Just like you did." She froze and then looked down. I almost wanted her to feel guilty about it. I wanted her to feel how I'd felt for 2 years. She chuckled. "You're guilt-tripping me, Francis," she said, grinning. "I think I liked you more when you were a massive pushover." I shrugged. "I'm just telling the truth this time." "Well, there's power in truth. Or something. Are you going to help him?" She drew in a deep breath, narrowed her eyes, and put her hands in her pockets. "Yes," she said. The Incident. We went to Caris's house for her to pick up some clothes, then to St. Pancras to get the train back to mine. It was too late to get a train all the way up north to Alid's university, so we decided to sleep at mine and head off in the morning. I'd texted my mum about it and she said that was fine. We spoke only a little on the train. It felt almost surreal to be with her like this again, sitting on opposite sides of a table, staring out of the window into the dark. So many things were different, but the way she leaned on her hand and the way her eyes flickered were exactly the same. We reached my house and she stepped inside and took off her shoes. "Wow, nothing's changed." I laughed. "We're not big into DIY. Mum entered the hallway from the kitchen. "Caris! Cool, I like your hair." "I had a fringe like that once. It looked terrible on me." Caris laughed too. "Thanks, I can actually see these days." Caris made small talk with my mum for a few minutes, and then we headed up to bed. It was going on midnight. It was dark outside, but the street lamps shone in a little, a dim orange glow amid the dark blue. "Do you remember when I slept over your house that time?" she asked me, after I'd changed into my pyjamas in the bathroom. "Oh yeah," I said, as if I'd only just remembered. I hadn't forgotten. It had been 2 days before the incident. We'd crashed here after Karis had dragged me to another house party I didn't really want to go to. "You were drunk." "Yeah." She went to clean her teeth and change into pyjamas, and I tried to ignore how awkward I felt and the way Karis kept looking at me. We both got into my double bed. I turned the ceiling lights off and put my fairy lights on. Then Karis rolled her head towards me and said, "What's it like to be clever?" I huffed out a laugh, but couldn't really look at her. I looked at the fairy lights on the ceiling instead. "Why do you think I'm clever?" "I mean grades. You get good grades. What's it like?" "It's not that special." "It's useful, I guess." "Useful." "Yeah, that makes sense." She rolled her head away and looked up at the ceiling too. "It would have been useful. My mum kept trying to make me get good grades. Wouldn't work. I'm just not clever." "You're clever in more important ways, though." She looked at me again and grinned. "Oh, that's cute." I glanced at her and couldn't resist a smile. "What? It's true." "You're cute." "I'm not cute." "You are." She brought up a hand to brush my hair. "Your hair looks cute like this." She stroked my cheek gently with one finger. "I forgot you have freckles. Cute." "Stop saying cute," I said, with a snort of laughter. She just kept on stroking my cheek with her fingertips. After a while, I rolled my head to face her, only to find we were just centimetres apart. Her skin flashed blue from the fairy lights, then softly changed to pink, then green, then blue again. "I'm sorry." My voice cracked before I could get the words out. "I'm sorry I wasn't a better friend." "You mean you're sorry you kissed me?" she said. "Yeah," I whispered. She dropped her hand, and then I realized what she was about to do, and I couldn't think of a way to say no in time. So I just let her lean forward and press her lips to mine. I let it happen for a couple of minutes. It was fine. Somewhere in the time that it was happening, I realized that I was not attracted to her anymore, and I did not want this to be happening at all. Also in that time, she rolled over so her elbow was on the other side of my head, and she was almost leaning on top of me, a leg pressed against me, and she kissed slowly, like she was trying to make up for shouting at me 2 years ago. I got the impression that she'd kissed quite a lot of people in between then and now. After I'd finished processing what was happening, I broke away by turning my head to one side. "I don't want that," I said. She stayed very still for a moment, and then she moved off me and laid back on the bed. "Okay," she said. "That's fine." There was a pause. "You don't secretly have a crush on me, do you?" I asked. She smiled to herself. "No," she said. "I just wanted to say sorry. An apology kiss." "Apology for what?" "I literally screamed at you for a good 10 minutes just because you kissed me." We both laughed. I felt relieved. I felt relieved mostly because I definitely did not have a crush on Karis anymore. Has Alid got a girlfriend? She asked. Oh, you don't know that either. What? Alid, do you remember his friend Daniel? They're a thing! Karis let out a witch cackle. That's brilliant! That is brilliant! I hope it pisses Mum right off. I laughed because I didn't know what to say. She tucked her hands underneath her cheek. Can we listen to University? She asked. You want to listen to an episode? Yeah, I'm curious. I rolled over so I was facing her again and rummaged under my pillow for my phone. I loaded up the first episode, might as well start at the beginning, and pressed play. As Alid's voice started to sound across the room, Karis moved again so she was lying on her back. She listened to Alid's voice and stared up at the ceiling. She didn't make any comments or even show much of a reaction, though she did smile at a few of the funny lines. After a few minutes, I started to zone out too, feeling like I was about to fall asleep. And then all I knew was Alid's voice, speaking to us from the air above our heads, speaking to us as if he were here, in the room. When the episode finished, the final chords of Nothing Left for Us fading away into nothing, the room felt painfully empty and so quiet, silent. I glanced over at Karis and was surprised to find her still in the same position, blinking slowly as if deep in thought. And then a tear dripped down from the corner of her eye. That was sad, she murmured. That was really sad. I didn't say anything. He was doing this all that time. Even before I left. He was calling. She closed her eyes. I wish I could be as subtle and beautiful. All I know how to do is scream. I rolled over to face her. Why didn't you want to help him? I'm scared, she whispered. Of what? That if I see him, I won't be able to leave him again. She fell asleep almost immediately after that, and I decided to text Alid. I doubted he would reply. Maybe he wouldn't even see it, but I wanted to do it all the same. Francis Janvier. Hey, Alid. Hope you're okay, pal. Just wanted you to know that I found Karis, and we're coming to see you tomorrow at your university. We're really worried about you and love you and miss you. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Universe City Podcast. Episode 1. Dark Blue. Posted by Universe City. In distress. Stuck in Universe City. Send help.
I'm not in love with you, but you, my friend. I want to tell you everything. Long ago, I was afflicted with a terrible predisposition to never say a word. And I honestly cannot understand why or how that happened. C'est la vie. But there is something about you which makes me wish I could speak like you do. I've watched you from afar, and you really are the best person that I have met in my whole life. You possess the ability to make people listen to you without question, even if you don't often use it. I almost want to be you. Does that make any sense? I bet it doesn't. I'm just rambling on. I'm sorry. Anyway, I hope when one day we meet again, you will listen to me and pay attention. I do not have anyone else to whom I could say these things. You might not even be listening now. Then again, you do not have to listen if you do not want to. Who am I to make you do anything? I'm not. I'm nothing. But you. Oh, you. Why, I'd listen to you for hours.